I'm a dude, and I'm inviting you to join me on a podcast about brews.
Does that include stouts?
Yes. Yes, of course it includes stouts. Like I was saying, join us every Saturday on the journey
Wait a minute. Do you guys do anything about like IPAs?
Yes.
Like that?
Yes, we do IPAs.
Okay.
Yes. Anyway, join us on the Journey into Comics Network for Brews with Dudes.
Do you care if I bring some Zima on?
Yes, I care if you bring Zima. Zima doesn't count. Zima's Dr. Dongo. Anyway, join us every Saturday for a podcast that delves into the craft brew world.
The following
is a Journey into Comics.
Journey into Comics.
It's a Journey into Comics.
Journey into Comics.
Journey into Comics.
Journey into Comics.
Network.
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 Production.
Production.
Hey, this is Josh Richmond, and you are listening to the Voice of Survival podcast, exclusively on the Journey into Comics Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Nate Phillips.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the Voice of Survival podcast. As the introduction said, I am your host, Nate. Today it is season 2, episode 22. We are in the season finale of the show. And it's really interesting when you look back at kind of where we started this season. We definitely had a different format. I was interviewing people, getting their stories, learning about their journey, having a really, really nice time. And then it's just, for some reason, it really got difficult to get people to commit to do the show. It wasn't, I don't know if it was just happenstance or whatever, but people that I was pursuing, they would say they were going to do it. We would set up a time, day of, minutes before, miraculously something has fallen through. And it was just like, okay, whatever. So instead, I kind of decided, well, you know what? I'm not going to keep taking those risks. I'll just do topics, but I'll do them differently, you know. And a lot of the episodes you guys have heard in the back half of this season have been me by myself just ripping on things. And that's what today is going to be. It's going to be very much a to-the-heart version of this show because, you know, as I sit here, you know, I've done 11 episodes with topics. Of the episodes I've done with topics, I've only had 2 or 3 guests during that time. Tyler was one. I know I had Dick another time. And maybe that was it. Shit. I guess I only had 2 guests, really. But I definitely intended to have more. But that's not really what's important. So moving to the topic-based thing is kind of free, though. Because now I can talk about stories that do involve my life, my journey, things I've been through. As well as give perspective to things that you might not even know I have this perspective. You might not know this or, you know anybody that has this kind of insider thoughts for some of these things. So when I was thinking about the finale, I wanted to do something kind of big and fun. And the guys, some of the guys who are part of the network's quote-unquote elite chat said, man, gambling would be really interesting, like legalization of gambling and all of that. Before we move on, let's just take a quick pause today as this drink break in our season finale is brought to you by Brews with Dudes. I'm drinking peppermint tea today because I've been really sick. I actually tried to record this podcast about an hour ago, and it was during probably the worst I felt in all this. Like, I don't know why that happened. I just sat down and all of a sudden it was like, oh, hey, you're going to have a sneezing attack and not be able to breathe out of your nose. And anyways, So, gambling and my story with gambling. Was I a gambler? Maybe, kind of. But I'm going to take you guys through my journey in a very specific pocket time in my life where I was pretty low. And I thought that I was at my lowest, and surprise, it gets lower. Oh, man. Not to be a bummer, but that's just kind of how this episode's probably going to turn out. Maybe you don't think that the story is as dark and depressing as I do, but we'll get there. We're going to talk all about it. So where does my journey with gambling begin? How does this all tie in? First time I ever walked into a casino was not to gamble. Actually, surprisingly enough, let's take you back a little bit before the first time I stepped into my first casino. So I remember I was working at Carter's Furniture and it was really rough. I was at that point probably every day or every other day doing somewhere between 4 and 5 Vicodin at a time a day because I was feeling really shitty all the time, man. Let me tell you, my partner and I, Nash, really took life years off of our bodies working at this company. We're two smaller dudes in and around the 175 to 200 pound range per person. And we were lifting 750-pound granite top curio cabinets and huge China buffets that just shouldn't be manhandled by two people. They should probably be maybe assembled in the home or something, you know, specialty like that. So we were taking life years off our bodies, and of course, there you have to cope. And it was really strange because at that time, at Carter's Furniture, they were always drug testing me and me alone because they knew I wouldn't pass for weed because at the time I wasn't smoking. And it was really interesting because they weren't paying attention to the fact that every time they tested me, I had high levels of oxycodone in my system and hydrocodone in my system from the Vicodin I was taking, you know? And it was... So, you know, of course, I'm getting drug tested constantly. And I remember, and I think I've told this story before, during that time at Carter's was the first time I was like, okay, I'm going to see if instead of dying on these pills, if I can smoke a bit of weed and see what it does to like revive me. And of course, it was like the first time in years and years since I was like a teenager that I had done it. And I smoke and it makes me puke. I fucking puked all over the backyard. It was hysterical. It was super rookie of me. And it was just like, I took the biggest hit I could because I just felt like I could still do that. And that was a mistake. So I, you know, was hating Carter's. We had come up to this, to Sarah's neck of the woods at the time to visit. And her brother was like, hey man, Horseshoe's hiring and you should get in on it. I think you'd be really good there. You're entertaining and you're funny and like, you're really good with math and shit like that. Like, I think you'd do good. I was like, okay, cool. Just send me the info and shit and I'll fill it out or whatever. So he does, and I fill it out and I'm like, pipe dream. I'll never work at a casino. That's just, there's no way. And like at the time, people that were working at Horseshoe were making like $27 an hour because the toke rate was so high. And I'll explain toke rate also at some point. You'll learn what that is, what it means. So I'm like, all right, I'll do it. So I sign up. All right, you know, fill out my application and I submit it, I think. Week goes on, 2 weeks go on, 3 weeks go on. And it's like getting into November. And I remember very, it's like eerily timed how this is happening because I'm pretty sure like today that I'm recording this, which tomorrow when it comes out will have been yesterday. I know that's not that hard to understand, but is like right when this all happened 8 years ago. So this is like exactly how it felt outside. It was cold as fucking dick and it was not very fun to be outside. And you know, I remember nothing's happening and David hits me up. He's like, hey man, did you you just not gonna take the gig? Like, you're passing up on this for sure? Are you sure about that? I was like, I didn't say I'm passing up on it. I filled my application out, man. Like, what the fuck? They didn't call me. He's like, oh, okay, well, give me your login information to the site. and let me see what I can do. And I give him the stuff, and he's like, he messages like a half hour. He's like, hey, man, I don't know if you know this, but you didn't actually send the resume in. You just filled it out and saved it onto the site. You didn't actually turn it in. I was like, fuck. Of course, because I didn't know. I'm a rookie or whatever. So he's like, no biggie. I got that taken care of. And I talked to somebody, and they should be calling you. Very next day, I like get off work. I'm getting ready to drive home. It's cold as balls again. I'm at Carter's, and I just thought to myself, like, if they call me, this is the last day I'll ever be at this place. I just fucking felt it in my bones. And they called me as I'm driving. And I'm like, hello. And it was like, hi, this is Tracy from Horseshoe Casino. And you have filled out an application and you were interested in employment. And we've taken a look at the application. We think you'd be a great candidate. But there's a couple steps in the process. You're going to have to come in and do a math test. And then we'll go from there. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. When is that? Tomorrow, 9 a.m. Oh, so pretty much going to have to literally go back to the house, get the shit packed up that I need, drive there, or get up really early in the morning and hope that we make it on time. And I don't want to be late to something like this, you know? So I think we decided, if my memory serves me correct, it's been a lifetime ago, it feels. We drove up here and stayed overnight, got up the next morning. Sarah accompanied me to the thing. I go up the steps, first time ever being in a casino. And as I go up the stairs, I notice a bunch of people I've never met before. We're kind of like sort of talking, yeah, I'm here for the thing and whatever, and going to do this test for this job or whatever. And they put herd us in. We all go and we take our math test. And we do it. And it's like a 30-minute time limit. About 20 minutes in, I'm done. Several people were done before me. They were very fast, but I was moderately paced or whatever. Then we got kind of herded out to the hallway one at a time, get told whether or not we are into the next phase, which is tomorrow. There's the interview process, and that's a whole different thing. So now I'm going to have to miss another day of work. I just missed this day of work, had to call in, make some bullshit up. Now I'm going to have to miss the next day. It was like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. They called me on Wednesday, the math test was on Thursday, and I think the interview was Friday. So I do the math test. They tell me I'm in. Tomorrow, interview, 9, don't be late, blah, blah, blah. We all get herded into this big room. It's a different kind of interview, totally. They're just talking to everybody kind of casually, asking questions and whatnot. People are answering casually. They're like, okay, you're going to have to come up, and whoever wants to do it, just do it. You're going to come up, and you're going to act something out, or you're going to do something, and we have to guess what it is. And of course, I think I was like second or third or somewhere in there, but I was like, hey, I'll go. And they called me, and I walked up there, and I was like, no, I am your father. And of course, somebody's like, oh, Darth Vader, that was awesome, Star Wars, yeah. And I was like, yeah, cool. So they guessed me, and I got to go sit down. So then we got to see everybody else do their bits and stuff, and I remember there's one girl who did, she's like, I need somebody to come up with me, and nobody knew anybody. So it was like kind of awkward, and some girl decided to go up with her, and they acted out this like Maury Povich, like, you are not the father scene, and she like freaked out and lost her mind. It was hysterical. It was very, very funny. There was a lot of really good acting. Some people were terrible. Some people didn't get the job. But they didn't get the job not because of that part of the interview, and you would think that that was kind of like what it hinged on. Can you be entertaining? It actually hinged on something much, much, much more subtle that if I didn't have insight, I might have fucked up. I might not have got the job, but I knew it was coming. So because I knew and I was aware, I was able to acclimate myself in the situation. So I was given the heads up that essentially I was going to have to talk to people when everybody leaves the room. Like, your people that are, like, your interview panel are going to leave the room. And when they do, they are going immediately into security control to watch the cameras in this room to see how everyone interacts. To see if someone just sits on their fucking phone and doesn't talk to anybody or doesn't interact with anybody and is just, like, afraid or whatever. Or to see the outgoing social butterflies. Obviously, I'm a social butterfly. So they tell you, you get the job, you don't get the job. So I got the job. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, cool. And now they're like, okay, here's the deal. Now you're going to go into dealer school. So you're not going to get paid, which sucks because David's class did, in fact, get paid. motherfuckers don't want to pay me, but we're going to talk about how that kind of worked out to my advantage. So we start, it was the very next week. I think it was like the next Wednesday we started class. They had the class Wednesday, day one. It was like November, fucking like 16th or something. Don't mind my sniffling. I'm just getting over being sick as I was talking about earlier. So it's just, they're going to come in waves. So anyways, we started class, and I remember they said, you know, you're not getting paid. It's a 12-week class. Holy shit. You want me in class for 3 months with no pay? That's fucking February or maybe even March, depending. Like, I don't know about all that. So they were like, but we will be taking people as we see their progress. And if you're really, really good and you work really, really, really hard, you'll get out first class. You'll be one of the first out. So I put my nose to the grind. I went to classes early. I stayed late. I would work games, like just like at the table, and just like consistently learn to deal and learn to better my shuffle. You have a very specific way you do your shuffle. It's a tried and true method that Horseshoe shows you how to do their shuffle. And it's a very specific thing. And you have to do it in like a minute and a half max. And you think, oh, that's easy. Shuffle some cards in a minute and a half. It's 8 decks, motherfuckers. It's a lot. It's really difficult. And you have to know your way around the cards. You have to know how much to take each time. It's very important you're not taking too little because it'll take you way too long. Also important you don't take too much because you won't get it mixed in nicely and there's a flow to it. So, yes, they have automatic machines that shuffle as well, which are, you know, nice or whatever. But it's fun to shuffle. I'm not gonna lie, it's fun to hand shuffle. So that was one of the steps you had to learn. You had to learn to hand shuffle. You have to learn basic strategy, which is how to play blackjack. What are the rules? What do the cards tell you to do? Because the house always has to just be the house. They're always just going up against each individual player, win, lose, or draw. You know, but the players can play a strategy to give themselves the best opportunity to win. And we have to know that because people are going to ask you, so I've got an ace and a six here. Soft 17, sir. It could be 17. You could just have 17. Just call it 17, which, you know, is good. Or you could double down and take one additional card, which if it's a 10 or a 4, you're in a good shape. And if it's anything else, it's going to be a little bit of a gamble. And he's like, oh, whatever. Depending on what the card is. If it's a 4, he's probably going to double down. If it's a 10, he's not doing it. He's going to stay at 17. See, and those are the rules. I mean, those, and that's just how the cards happen. But every hand, you will always have someone asking, what does strategy say here? What does strategy tell you to do here? How do you do it? What's the best play? What would you do if you were in my shoes? And well, sir, if I was in your shoes, I probably wouldn't be gambling, which is kind of where we lead to the next part. So 6 weeks, no money. I have a little bit of money from Carter saved up. I officially quit there and told my uncle off, and it's a big to-do, and it was just a part of the family drama that I've lived through. So fucking, I am like, I have a little bit of this money, and I think, not always, but I think I'm going to take small chunks, like maybe $100 or $200 at a time in sporadic bursts, and either at Horseshoe or at one of the very nearby casinos, gamble a little bit and see how it feels to be on the other side of the table and get a feel for what happens and actually put some real money down to see maybe good things happen. Spoiler alert, good things happened. I actually made out like a bandit. I made some pretty decent money in that time while I was not officially employed with Horseshoe. Now, they did request that we didn't gamble there, which we broke that rule a couple times because, yeah, we wanted to see what it was like. And it was very interesting. We kind of kept our heads low and we were just in there doing our things and just getting a feel for it, you know? So walked away making some money, and it was actually very nice. As soon as I became an official dealer, I never wanted gambling again. Anytime I went to Vegas, I lost. And we're going to talk about that in a minute, obviously. So during the time I'm in the dealer school, I'm doing a little bit of gambling here and there. I'm making money, which is keeping me ahead, keeping us in the green until I can transition. And I'm actually, in the first 6 weeks, I'm one of the people that come out. They had like 4 or 5 people selected that were going to definitely be going out 1st. They were officially getting their auditions, and they were officially going to become dealers, because you audition for the role of a dealer. You have to actually deal a game and go through all kinds of different scenarios and setups and make sure you don't fuck up single one. You have to get everything 100% right. And you have to, again, know basic strategy, because you'll be being live quizzed by some of the people playing the game. So while all this is happening, I was not one of the first five called, and I was very disturbed by that, because I was like, no, I've been working extra hard. Like, the people they called haven't been staying after class or any of these things. Like, maybe they know somebody. That was my first thought. I was like, they probably know somebody on the inside that's trying to get them money first. Because again, and I only knew David. He was the only person I knew, but he was still just a dealer. So it's not like he had a lot of extra pull. So I asked them straight up. I was like, what do I need to get my audition? And they were like, listen, we're going to do a shuffle in a couple days, or like before the end of the week. If you stay after today and can get your shuffle in this time, we'll let you audition tomorrow. And I was like, what? And she was like, yeah, you're close. We just have to see that your shuffle's good. And I think I had to make sure I 100% of my basic strategy, the test, which was the next day as well, which I did. And that's like, they give you a bunch of scenarios with the cards. You have to write out what the actual play is. So ultimately, they let me audition. And I was very nervous, and you have to deal a game, and you have to be very professional, and you have to talk the talk, and you have to be able to walk your game. And walking your game, you're like, what's walking your game? You're standing still. It's not really necessarily true, because there's actually game protection knowledge you have to keep people from robbing you, because people will try to cap their bets. They will try to pull fast ones. It is brutal. People are awful. Even if they're on camera, they think they can get away with anything. And trust me, they can. Here's the deal. If you catch it, it's good. If the sky catches it and you don't catch it, it's bad, because it means you weren't walking your game, which means if I'm dealing to first base, the first person I'm going to deal to, I'm going to pivot my hips to where I'm almost shoulder to shoulder with the guy. I can look directly down at his money, and I can also look across the table at last base, and I can also survey everybody in the middle. And of course, when I'm in the middle of the table, I'm going to stand in the middle. And when I'm on the far side, at the last base position, I'm going to do the opposite that I did in first base, with my shoulder next to him looking at first base and being able to survey the whole table. Those are little insights you have to know, right? You have to also know how insurance works, and should you take insurance, shouldn't you take insurance? If you take insurance, how do you pay insurance? If someone gets a blackjack on 2750, how do you pay them? You know, if someone gets a blackjack, I mean, literally, it's, you have to be on. So I do the audition, and it's very difficult, and I think I failed. And she's like, you got it. Boom. So she's like, now we're in the next step. You're officially done with class. And that was cool, because then like I had to go a couple more times while I was in orientation, just as like a finalization step, where people are like, great job, dude. It's awesome that you're, you know, you did it or whatever. And that was really kind of the best time of the casino life for me, was that class. Camaraderie, there's no real money being exchanged. You know, if we would have been paid just to learn and just to, you know, maybe teach that class after we learned that class, man, that would have been the greatest thing ever. But then it gets to the real shit, and you go, okay, well, so your first week, you work days at the boat, and they have you come in the mornings. You work a slow pace because there's not a lot of people on the floor. You work 3 or 4 days for on-the-job training. You got somebody who is shadowing you, watching your every move, telling you if you do it right, if you do it wrong. If you do it wrong enough, they got to call the floor over to fix it, or, you know, whatever the scenario calls for. And then they're like, congratulations, you're a dealer. Are you part-time or full-time? Do you want full-time? I never took full-time. I only ever was a part-time table games dealer, because you still work pretty much a full-time schedule. And at that time, tips were good. I mean, it started off, I think I was making like $21 an hour. And then a month later, it was like $17 an hour. And then like 6 months later, it was $11 an hour. And then like, you know, towards the end of my run, it was like $9 an hour. So it was really 13, but the toke rate had fallen just significantly. We're going to talk about that. Tokes. What are tokes? Okay, so let's get to tokes. When you're a dealer, people are going to tip you. Hey, fucking one big ass hand, man. thanks, you did so much hard work. Here's 5 or here's 100, right? And while it'd be super swell to hold on to that money, you don't get to. They take every dollar that is toked to or tipped to dealers, and they give an aggregate total for 2 weeks. Then they take the aggregate total of hours actually worked in that two-week time, and they divide the total money earned by the total hours worked for every dealer, and then that's the toke rate. So, you know, you have a huge payout where somebody tips a lot of money, and you had some high roller that's on a hot streak and is just flowing with fucking giving you $1,000 checks. Checks is the term for chips. You guys all think they're poker chips. They're actually called checks. Different terminology. I know, it's confusing. You're like, what the fuck? Also, you have to clear your hands. That's the thing. When you're on the table, anytime you touch anything, you touch your face, you clear your hands. You touch the table, you clear your hands. You touch someone else's money, you clear your hands. That's to show the cameras above you, I've got nothing on either side of me that I'm hiding, and everything is fine. You always clear your hands, everything. And it's actually, it gets to a point where it's a habit where even when you're not at that job, you're clearing your hands. You're doing your dishes, clearing your fucking hands. Vacuuming your house, clearing your hands. You're like, what is going on? Why am I clearing my hands for every single thing I do? It's so confusing. But then, you know, at some point, once you leave that business, you don't clear your hands all the time. And then that's a weird thing, because even thinking about it, it's like, whoa, I used to use so much energy clearing my hands. Like, it's exhausting to always show your hands to the quote-unquote camera. So these are all little insights to how that industry operates and a little behind the scenes and whatnot. So the hold is the area where dealers meet by the pencil. And they will discuss, various things they're going to do on the floor, what games they're playing, you know, whatever. Most people just BS and make friendships there. The hold is the first time I had a really scary experience at Horseshoe. And it was the first time I kind of like recognized how little they care about their people. So here's the scenario, and this is exactly how it happened. So what we'd do is, before the hold, we would have, like, a little, like, group meeting where we would all just, like, have the roundup or whatever and discuss the going-ons of the week and if anybody got any good feedback or if anybody was, like, elected as, like, the star of the month or something, or, what you know, praises or whatever, or if there was things going wrong, hey, listen, we need to tighten these things up on the boat. So we were getting ready to do that, and we were all standing there waiting for pencil to start the meeting, and this girl was standing right by one of the pillars. I'll never forget this. And all of a sudden, she just like made this weird face and turned and, smashed her face directly into this diamond plate corner of this pillar. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, what is happening? That's not right. And then she fell to the ground, and it was like in those two instances I realized she's having a seizure. People are trying to help her. There's blood everywhere. It's absolute chaos. It's like, you know, panic inducing. My heart's racing through my chest. I'm like just stunned at witnessing this happen to a human person. I've never seen somebody have that happen to them. And it was like totally overwhelming experience. So anyways, long story short, because of that, they fired her because she pointed out there's a 12-point system at Horseshoe. Any regular day that's not a weekend day is worth 1 point. Any weekend day is 2 points. And if it's a holiday, it's double whatever point value is. So if you miss on Memorial Day, it's worth 4 points. If you no call, no show, it's also worth 4 points. When you get to 12 points, you're fired. Usually at 11 and a half, they give you a written warning that's like, hey, listen, you're 11.5. You don't back it off the edge here. You're going to be done, you know. So, oh, and you lose half a point if you're late, which also doubles to 1 point if it's on one of those special occasions where it doubles, whether it's a weekend or 2 points if it's during a holiday. So you quickly learn it's like kill or be killed there. It's very cutthroat. And people are nice, but people are also all suffering. Like, everybody is suffering, and it's just misery. Everybody is miserable at all times. They're all just absolutely bummed out. 1 second. And while we're talking about suffering, it's really interesting too, because they tell you, like, hey, you're probably going to be randomly drug tested at Horseshoe. I never was drug tested in 2 years that I was there, not once. Probably a good thing, because there towards the end I was smoking a lot of reefer. But, you know, anyways, everyone's suffering, and people take drugs, and some people will, like, get addicted to painkillers or other things of that nature. You know, the body is not meant to be up late and working. Your body is not, we're not literally created to do that. So when you do that, it totally messes you up. And you got to think, when you're working at Horseshoe and you're a dealer, you're dealing with numbers, and you're dealing with numbers in between 1 hour and 20 and 2 hour spurts at a time that you have to deal without stopping. Counting numbers over and 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 over. And let me tell you something, man. At some point you fatigue, your brain makes mistakes. We are literally all human. To say that in the time that I was at a Horseshoe, I never made a single mistake would be an absolute bullface lie. I messed up. Not badly and not often and not even enough to ever get in trouble. But I made mistakes. I know there was a time where I paid a dude out when I know he lost, and he just was like, oh, whatever, and didn't pay attention to it, because I just helped him out, you know? So you're sitting there and you're like, okay, Nate, what's the inner workings of the casino, like behind closed doors? What are some other things going on? And it's a lot of fraternization between people, and relationships are made, and some of them are, not necessarily good, and some of them are downright despicable. But I think that what happens is that you almost have to bond with people that are in that environment with you in such a way, because you, I don't even know how to word this correctly, but like, only they get your suffering, and only they are on the same kind of pattern as you. Like, no one else in the casino industry is on that pattern other than people in the industry, if you get what I'm saying. So when you bond with people like that and make those kind of friendships, they change. They're different, because you're just understanding those people on a different level. They get you on a different level. And some of that stuff can be really toxic. And it can be really, 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 really bad. And you couple that with the environment of the casino industry, which I'm here to tell you, folks, it's not happiness. It's not the fun times that you see in Iron Man, where Tony's winning the money at the start. It's actually kind of like in Iron Man when he gets seven out in the craps table and he loses all his money. Like, he doesn't lose all his money, but that happens. It's flippant. There's no rhyme or reason. You know, you could go in there and say, man, I've had the best luck in my life today. I'm going to go in the casino and make all this money. And I tell you what, it's not going to happen. And if it does, good for you, but it's not likely to happen. The amount of people who won, and I mean, that's even a stretch term, won, in my time at Horseshoe is like less than five. But the stories I have that I could tell, and I could just rip off story after story after story of different people doing different things, of losing money, it's depressing. And that's the thing. People are trapped in a cycle when they gamble, because they're addicted to the chase. And especially if you win, like, oh, one time I'm going to win. I'm going to one time call it and win. Right? Just this once I'll call it. And then you win, you're like, oh, what? It actually happened. Now I'm riding this high of like, I won. I'm invincible. Anything can happen now. But then anything usually does happen, because people get greedy. People never walk away after they just win one hand, because you got to press your luck. Try again. How much more can you make? How much further can you take it? How many more attempts and hands can you withstand where you push? Or you might win the side bet and win all your money back, but lose the hand and lose $20, you know? I mean, there are so many little variables when all these things are happening. And here's what usually breaks down. People start to chase. They get down. They get down more. Then they get upset that they're down, so they go, let's dig deeper into our pockets and try to get more, and they can't. And they scratch, and they claw, and they bite, and they try really, really hard, and they'll never get the money they lost back. Some people call it a wash, and they'll go, it was a day, whatever. I lost, I'm not coming back, I'm done. But you know how many people I saw in there every single day losing hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars a day? And I mean, I'm not here to tell anybody what to do with their money, but that's not good on a person's psyche. Especially it's not good when other people are hurting and all you're doing is funneling it into a corporate business that does not care about their employees or their employees' health. Here's a number, and this is something that me and my buddy were just talking about yesterday. I had him over at the house. He was like, do you know the number of people that have killed themselves that were in the casino industry that we knew? And I was like, yeah, the number is startling. It's like over 10, which is insane. It should be like none, honestly. But that place changes you. You work these late shifts. There are no windows. There are no clocks on the main floor. So if you don't wear a watch, you have no idea what time it is. That's why I was addicted at a time to time pieces, because it allowed me to keep track of what time it was and how much longer I had to withstand or endure the bullshit. You know, but all in all, you look at some of the situations that I dealt with, man, and the fact that I even have to tell these stories are just like, I tell these stories to myself sometimes just as a constant reminder. Like, remember when that happened? So here's one. I'm working high limits blackjack, which you get a special different vest for high limits. It's a dark color. It's not the bright color like everybody else wears. I get the high limit vest because I'm really good with clientele. They've put me back there all the time. I was back there when the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup in 2015. No, 2013. I didn't work there in 2015. It was definitely in 2013. So, like, I was in the high limit room and celebrating with all these people and different, like, whatnot. And you would see a lot of the same people in the high limit room spending money, a lot of business owners and whatnot, and nice guys, people who are funny and whatnot. But you also had a lot of people that were just carrying this darkness. And I'm sitting there one night, and I remember I was facing the Bach room, and the secondary pit, which they never, ever, ever, ever usually had open. I mean, once in a while they did, but usually they didn't. So I'm over there, and dead table, the guy walks up to me. He sits down, he kind of smiles, like, hey, how's it going? He's like, yeah, it's pretty shitty. I was just in Vegas, and I lost like $150,000. And I was like, whew, dang, dude. He's like, yeah. I literally left Vegas and I took a limo straight here because I'm trying to recoup. And I was like, whoa, okay. So I was like, what's the plan here? And he's like, I need to talk to your manager. Okay. So I call my pit over. My pit's like, what's up? He's like, I want you to call your manager and let me gamble $60,000 on one hand right now. Okay, 1 second. So the floor calls, they call, they make a couple security calls. They're like, if he's got it, let him do it. Okay. So literally I have a shift supervisor on my right, the floor on my left. I am dealing the hand, this guy by himself, no one else, one hand of blackjack, $60,000. He fucking loses. So he loses, okay? And it's just like awful. And he's crushed, you can tell. And he's not going back to the well. He's like, thanks, man. I appreciate you trying or whatever. Can I see how it would have played out if I would have done things differently? So we go through all the scenarios. If he would have doubled down, what if he would have split these cards? I think he started with double sixes and he just hit to an 18 and stayed. And I think the dealer ended up with 20. No matter what happened, every scenario, he was going to lose that hand. Literally was not, as they say, in the cards. Literally was not in the cards for him to win. And I watched a dude lose more than my collective debt in my whole life. I've never accumulated $60,000 of debt, and just in one hand, it was like crushing. I've also never had $60,000, so it was just like, oh my God. And it was that moment I really think I started to go, there's something evil about this place. And then, like, you learn really dark truths. Like, example, they take the state cards that people get, like the government cheese, you know, the government handout money. The horseshoe takes those cards. People can gamble the money that they get from the state. And people do. On the regular. Unbelievable, man. And then markers. A marker is where you get money from the casino up front. It's like a loan. And they say, hey, here's this loan. They will give people insurmountable amounts of money. And people have to pay that back, man, or they don't get more markers, and then it's not like the old days where they chop people's fingers off or whatever. It's much different. It just wrecks their credit, and all this stuff is bad. So, I mean, okay, so sure, losing $60,000, that sucks. Money is money, though, right? Maybe that guy had $60,000 to just blow, or he wouldn't have done that, right? That's what you might be thinking. I'm going to tell you a different story from a different perspective of the casino industry. And talk about one of the worst nights of my life. So I was scheduled an 11 p.m. to 9 a.m., 10-hour shift, which is unheard of. You never worked into 9 a.m. because that's the day shift side. They never need carryover because they usually have too many day side people and they have to send them home. For whatever reason, though, someone, I don't know who to blame, F-U-C-K'd up, screwed the pooch, as it were, and left me on the boat as the only dealer who knew four-card poker. Not pie-gal poker, which I also knew, four-card poker. It's like a regular carnival game. That's what they call those. So I'm on four-card. I'm already mad. There is nobody in the casino. And I'm like, why don't we just close this game down? Send me home, because you don't need this game open. There's not a demand for this game. I'm just killing the toe crate right now. I'm just eating hours that don't need to be taken, you know? And they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. A bunch of excuses and all this, which is what I usually heard was excuses and just people not knowing how to do their job, which if I would have been a floor, I would have done things totally different. And usually when I was working with floors that understood how I operated, we talked in a certain way to each other. Lit it. All I had to say was lit it. They would give me the heads up or the heads down. Like, lit it means pull your lid for your game. We're closing that one down. The sooner we can get this pit closed down, the sooner we can get dealers moved to other locations, which means more people who are starting work, who started work earlier in the day, get to go home earlier on the EO list, the early out list. You would sign in, you would write your name if you wanted it and what your shift was. And you had to make sure that you didn't sign before the last person from the previous shift. So if the 5-3s come in and, you know, it's 4:30 and there should be no more 5-3s and you sign it and then another 5-3 walks in who's late or some shit, you got to go after them. They'll move you. They'll make sure that person gets out first is essentially what I'm saying. Because start time mattered. So, you know, all these little intricate details of the casino. And we talked about me being at the four card table. And I just want to go home. I'm done. I'm so over it. Finally, this lady sits down. It's like 7 a.m. and I really want to just go the fuck home. And at 7 a.m, it was like 6:30. So she starts playing, wins a couple hands of four card, then she loses, then she wins a couple hands, then she loses like three hands. It's like 7:05. She picks up her phone. She's talking to somebody. She's like, yeah, baby, I'll be there. Don't worry, honey. I'll take you to school. Yeah, don't worry. No, mama's going to be there. Don't worry. I'll be there. I'll be on time. Don't worry. I'll be able to take you to school this morning. Don't worry. Click. I proceeded to watch this lady not leave the table until I left work, which was after her kid would have had to have been at school. She left her kid to figure it out on her own how to get to school because she had an addiction to gambling. Like, the realest, truest, purest form of addiction. Couldn't leave the table because she was chasing something she was not going to win. She was trying to get in the money, and she was not going to win it. And that's another thing, too, man. You see people that are in there that are chasing money because they need to pay their bills. They're desperate. They don't know what to do. Oh, paycheck was only $400, and all my bills accumulative for $1,200. Well, if I'm not going to pay any of the bills anyways, maybe I should risk it and try to make more money so I can have a chance to pay the bills. That's how people look at it. Sometimes they get away with it too. Sometimes they win, but you can tell when people are chasing money and they need it because it goes from being fun. They're not enjoying themselves gambling. You have to be very different in tonally how you act when these people are at your table because they're angry. They're on the verge of being violent even. Hit the table, throw something on the ground, get themselves kicked out sometimes, you know, say some really rude shit to me. People are awful. But the casino industry is a really dark place, man. And here's another true story. The casino that I worked at, I know for a fact did it. I without question, I know for an absolute fact that they had done this before. But they covered up the coverage of a suicide that happened on the premises of Horseshoe. A gentleman had lost, not at my table, and I don't even think I was working that night, but it was during my time working at Horseshoe. Dude lost his money at a table. He went, pulled more money out, lost that money too, pulled more money out, lost that money, pulled a large sum of money out because he was desperate, lost all that. And because apparently that was like his life savings or his family's savings or some shit, he literally went to the seventh floor of the parking garage and jumped off. Called it a life, dude. Because he lost it all. And you know, the crazy part is that we as Horseshoe employees knew about it. Because people we worked with had to respond to that shit. But they didn't cover it on any news channels because Horseshoe had paid to make sure the news didn't get coverage. It looks bad if a casino has somebody kill themselves there. Why'd that happen? It raises a lot of questions. Makes the ethics of gambling look bad. You know, and then it's interesting too to talk about gambling because they've just introduced the new kind of gambling to a lot of these casinos where they can do the sports booking. You know, and you can bet on fights, you can bet on fighters, you can bet on all kinds of different things. Put money down, if you win, you get X amount of odds, whatever. So people are getting the itch in a different way, and it's still not good, you know. And I mean, playing the lotto is not good per se, and I think that there are people that chase the lotto. Like every day they spend $2 on a ticket, every single day, every day they're buying a lotto ticket every day, and they're not going to win. You got to be sporadic and stuff. I buy a lotto tickets like once every 3 months or something, randomly at a random gas station, just like, oh, I'm gonna just like post up in this place and get a snack. Oh, hey, the Powerball's up to 138 million, you say? Well, I'll take a swing. And that's usually as far as it goes. Who? And I mean, it's weird. I've won the Powerball before. I've gotten like two digits in the Powerball, which gave me $4. Woo. But sports gambling is a different kind of thing because I feel nowadays most sports are rigged. I know that's a weird thing to say, and maybe that's a whole other topic for another time, maybe for another season even, but I genuinely believe that a lot of professional sports with professional athletes are rigged, and they are rigged as such because there's a lot of money involved. It's a business. You gotta look at all these things as a business. Vince McMahon runs the WWE like a business, right? He has to make business decisions, put a quote-unquote face of the company on the big screen so people are into it or whatever. That's the same to be said about the NFL, same to be said about the NBA, and to some degree the NHL doesn't really have faces because everybody's all bludgeoned and looks awful. But oh, genuinely, you get what I'm saying, though. So would you take a risk and you know, listen, I can control the narrative and give people something to root for or have some crazy thing happen or whatever and really build up a brand that's going to sell t-shirts, it's going to sell caps when they win the Super Bowl or whatever. they're going to sell footballs and jerseys and all kinds of things and t-shirts and underwear and hoodies and ball caps. I mean, everything, literally everything you can think of. I probably said baseball caps already or hats. But if you can control that narrative and determine who's going to get that spot, you can determine where money is made. So you can say, well, X place needs some help monetarily wise. We'll give them the rub, or this place needs this. We'll give them a shot, you know. And sure, some of the game stuff is pure talent and whatnot. But when referees are making calls that alter the game and give the Packers a win when there was clearly no pass interference, I mean, that's not even a Chicago Bears game I'm talking about. I think it was against the Lions. Like, Aaron Rodgers got sacked, lost the 15 yards, put him out of field goal range, would have cost them the game, but somehow there was a face masking penalty that no one, literally, they couldn't find footage of it. Doesn't exist. There was no face masking. But for some reason it was called, for some reason that call stood, and for some reason it put him in field goal range, which gets them to kick the field goal, which gets them to win the game. And that's, again, the narrative. See, referees should not be involved. I think you can tell when referees are involved, some games are fixed when they are that heavily involved in big decisions like that. Because it should be up to the talent of these guys who are playing, right? And I've kind of deviated from the path a little bit here. But all in all, talking about my time at Horseshoe, it changed me. To say that it didn't would be a lie. I became a dark, less happy version of myself. I think there is an early version of that me, or a late version rather of that me, that exists in early versions of Journey into Comics. When I first started that show, was at the tail end of that run at the casino. And, you know, ultimately I just wanted to be happier and have a happier life. And the way that that casino industry worked did not work for me. And I don't think it works for other people. Like, sure, it could turn up revenue. But ultimately what happens is things like what happened to Horseshoe. Like, you would think higher clientele. That's why the toke rate was so good for a time. Higher clientele, tipping more money, willing to tip a little extra because they got a little extra. It's not a big deal. But when you get people who are broke trying to pay their bills, trying to get by, guess what? You're not going to get those people tipping. It's almost impossible. Why does that happen, though? Because they make the games cheaper. They say instead of making all of our games minimum $25 per table, we're going to make them $10 per table. Well, $10 is, as the train of our existence shows up in the finale here, $10 versus $25 is a big departure of the quality of clientele. And a broke person could come down to their last $10 and be on a table. Or you get fleas who are like, hey, man, can I get $5? Hey, man, can I get $5? Hey, man, can I get a dollar? Hey, can I get $2? Hey, can I get $1.50? Hey, can I just put this dollar on your side bet? And if I win, you win. Or if you win, I win. Like, it's like that because they drop the like, how much it costs to get on the table. And then it just drives the quality of clientele down. And people are looking for a higher quality place. So guess what? They go elsewhere where that is the status quo, as it were. Where people do have a $25 minimum in most games, or, you know, $50 minimum, really. But all in all, I think that if you have an addiction to gambling, I really, really suggest you take a long, hard look in the mirror. I think that it's destroying your family more than you probably even know, and it's destroying yourself. I think there are healthier outlets. If you have money that you have burning a hole in your pocket that you're just trying to give away, give it to a charity. Give it to a podcast that you really like. Give it to a band that you support. Give it to a local business that's just flourishing. But don't, you know, invest that money. Don't just say, and just piss it out the window, because it is going to long-term affect you. You won't recover from that, and it will haunt you. I've seen it happen. There's never been a person I met in the 2 years I worked there. I never met a person that was a longtime gambler that was happy. They were all unhappy and chasing, and would usually play really kind of aggressive, quick-styled games. Hit, don't hit, you know, fast decision-making, because they were annoyed. They just were trying to chase, and you can't. Either the money's going to flow or it's not. And if it's not your time, it's not your time. You cannot force the river. You can only succumb to it and let it wash you downstream. I think that was the ancient one who quoted that. But anyways, folks, I want to thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. It's been kind of a ramble. You know, I think that the casino industry is a dark, horrific place. And I really do encourage you to strongly consider, like, if you're thinking about working at a casino, really consider your, like, self-evaluate and think about your psyche and say, can I actually handle it? Because I'm telling you, it's a lot harder than you think. It takes a toll. It takes such a great toll on you, man. Being on the road late at night like that, every night, having to drive in the snow, in inclement weather, to and from the Horseshoe was a stress, man. Because there's a lot of factors when you live 20 minutes away from your job that can come in between trains and drawbridges and accidents and just snow itself causing travel to take way longer. I mean, it's like every aspect of the casino industry is just set up to really kind of screw you in one way or another, mentally or emotionally or whatever. Not the best place to work, I wouldn't say. And like I said, if you are a casual gambler, you know, you gamble once in a great while, kind of like myself. Oh, I might get a lotto ticket here or there or whatever. Always look at things that are good with the odds. If you're going to go to a casino, play Baccarat. It's 50-50. You have 50% chance of winning. The house has 50% chance of winning. That's the best odds you can get. Everything else is not that good odds. You're not going to win at blackjack. I'm sorry. You're not going to win at craps. You're probably not going to win at any kind of the pokers either. That's just how it goes. Okay. Anyways, folks, I want to thank you so much for listening to Season 2, Episode 22 of The Voice Survival. You guys know where you can check us out. Make sure to get us on iTunes or Apple Music and Podbean, Stitcher, Radio, Google Play Music, Spotify, CastBox, TuneIn, and all the other ones. Just search Journey into Comics Network. Also go to patreon.com/journeyintocomics for our Patreon site, which we need your help. Throw us a dollar, man. You're chucking a dollar out the window buying Snapples. You can give the network $1 a month or $3 a month or $5 or $10 or whatever you can afford a month and help us flourish. And here's the deal. If we can get our Patreon, okay, I'm going to make this claim right now. If we can get our Patreon to $100 a month income source right now, I will personally hold a poll to determine how many people you guys want from the network to join me in eating a lineup of 10 of the hottest, spiciest wings. Literally going for all the hottest sauces I have in a Wings of Death challenge. And we will find one ultimate winner. But that's only if we get to that hundo mark. I'm just saying. So you better get your dollar bills ready. All right, folks. Anyways, I want to thank you guys so much again for listening to my episode on gambling and the casino industry. And to kind of finish it up, I ended up quitting Horseshoe. I walked away from it. I walked away happier because of it. I realized that it was not for me and it was not for my health. And I'll never go back, not to that place anyways, or not to any of those basic kind of casinos. Here's to new beginnings in that world. Anyways, folks, thank you so much for listening to Season 2, Episode 22, The Voice of Survival Podcast. This has been your season finale. I am the Voice of Survival, Nate. And as always, this is the Voice of Survival, signing out.